Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Clinical Science Podcast. My name is Dr. Panarella. Today, we're going to be talking about non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs. And I do have to say, I will get a little personal here, personal about myself. This is the third recording of this podcast, three times. Oh, I hope this is a winner, because I don't think I got a fourth in me. First one got interrupted by multiple phone calls, and then the second one got interrupted. I was halfway through recording it and they came to cut the grass. So there you have it. I want to make the cleanest, tightest, best podcast that I can. And that really, those two didn't really work out very well. So here I am, third time is the charm, I hope. Anyway, let's get into it. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs, NSAIDs, very common over-the-counter product for us humans. Many different types, but they all basically do the same thing. And in veterinary medicine, we do have veterinary specific pharma companies that are producing animal specific NSAIDs as well. So that's really been a great boon to veterinarians and to the owners of animals. So NSAIDs have three primary functions. They're antipyretic, which means they work to reduce fever. They're analgesic, which means they're pain medications. They work to block the transmission of pain. And they're also anti-inflammatory. And then that's one of the biggest components, actually, of an NSAID, is that it's reduction in inflammation. And reducing inflammation also secondarily will reduce fever and will reduce pain. So three primary functions. In veterinary medicine, the labeled indications for use of these drugs as regulated by the FDA. So if you were actually to look at the bottle that a veterinarian or the package that a veterinarian was using, it actually has what the actual labeled indications are. And there's only two: osteoarthritis, which is most people would just call arthritis. Osteoarthritis is abbreviated OA. Osteoarthritis is inflammation based around any joint in the body, in an animal's body. And what ultimately is happening is the joint is breaking down, the cartilage is wearing out or worn out, there's changes in the synovial fluid, there's changes in the synovium, the joint itself, the joint capsule starts getting thicker. The synovial fluid starts getting thicker. It's not as viscous or slippery. Cartilage is a fairly slippery surface, and joints are just articulations between two bones, which allow the bones to move, you know, obviously relatively, because you know from yourself, relatively smoothly. And when that starts to break down, the body starts trying to also lay down new bone, because the body is actually going to ultimately try to freeze up that joint, because that joint is just causing multiple different problems. So you get an excess of calcium and new bone formation around that joint. And also secondarily, the second labeled indication is treatment of post-op pain. And, you know, actually, and post-op pain, technically speaking, is from, you know, spay and neuters. But it is commonly used by veterinarians and veterinary surgeons, used post-operatively, sometimes pre-operatively, depending on what the surgery is and the health status of the animal. It can be used preoperatively as well. And there is some basis for using preemptive, what's called preemptive analgesia to reduce the amount of pain. And there's multiple studies that talk about preemptive analgesia and putting analgesics on board, which is termed on board the patient prior to the animal. And I would say, too, also in human beings, the experience, the creation of pain during surgery. Now, off-label usage or extra-label usage is when there is an alternative use that a veterinarian deems that this drug is useful for. And anytime that a veterinarian dispenses or a veterinarian writes a prescription for a product or an animal, they must have what's called a veterinary client-patient relationship. And that means that that veterinarian has to know the animal. Ideally has done a physical exam, knows the health status of the animal, and also has a relationship with you, the owner. And as long as that exists, veterinarians can use off-label medication. Now, we're only talking dogs and cats. I'll just make a quick aside for those in the field that food animals are any animals that produce a product that's going to go into a person. So beef cattle, dairy cattle, hogs, chickens, as examples. There are limits to what a veterinarian can prescribe for those animals. And if they prescribe certain drugs, then there's withdrawal times. And then there's basically, I use the term banned, there's banned products that you cannot use. But in dogs and cats, we do have a lot more freedom in what we use off-label. In off-label usage, there's, an animal, let's say, animals that experience trauma or a lameness that you don't have, trauma, hit by a car maybe. Again, it's patient dependent, depends, on the health of the animal, depends how severe the trauma is. And, also in lameness, you might get a non-specific lameness in an animal. Many veterinarians, provided again the animal's healthy and patient dependent, will dispense or write a prescription for a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. And they are quite effective for what they are prescribed for, what they are labeled for. Forms for dogs and cats, there's injectable and oral. Larger animals, there's some pastes that are available. I'm sure at this point there's other formulations, but primarily they're injectable and oral tablets and what have you. Let's talk about how non-steroidals function or work. And that's called the mechanism of action, abbreviated MOA. And in a nutshell, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories block or inhibit COX, COX. COX stands for cyclooxygenase. Cyclooxygenase is an enzyme that catalyzes biochemical reactions found in most cells, which again is going to translate into most tissues throughout the body. So some injury or insult to a cell or cells is going to create a reaction, and you're going to get the cells going to release arachidonic acid, which is abbreviated AA, and that arachidonic acid is released and it is turned into prostaglandins by the use of cyclooxygenase in the cells, or COX. And prostaglandins by themselves, they do want to keep the body functioning normally. So we all have, and animals all have, circulating prostaglandins basically all the time. It's the term prostaglandin itself. It doesn't mean that it's all good or all bad, I would say, or negative effects. There are positive effects of prostaglandins, and we need them to function normally, and so do animals. So, for example, prostaglandins help maintain the lining of the GI tract by production of mucus. Prostaglandins help regulate blood flow to the kidneys and proper blood flow to the kidneys. They also function in how well platelets work. They also are, like we said, the three functions of non-steroidals. They also are involved in the pain, inflammation, and fever pathways. So they're involved in multiple different things throughout the entire body. And COX can be broken down into COX-1 and COX-2. COX-1 is primarily involved with normal body bodily functions, such as the functionality of platelets, how platelets work, and tissue organ functioning, like I said, the GI tract and the blood flow to the kidneys. COX-2 is primarily involved around inflammation. And inflammation, it is a necessary part of our bodies, because without the inflammatory reaction, the inflammatory action is part of your body's defenses. Sometimes that is very well regulated by the body, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes the inflammation is so extreme that we need to tamp it down. And I'm sure most of us have experienced pain in some fashion, that we have taken some over-the-counter non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, or you've been prescribed it by your own physician. And generally speaking, with the proper dose, and you take the proper frequency, you take a drug at its proper frequency, dosing interval, you're going to get some pain relief. Well, the same thing is true in animals. So primarily, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories geared towards COX-2 selective, so that it's suppressing more of COX-2 than COX-1. But that is not a all or nothing. There is mix between COX-1 is not just involved with, let's say, platelets and bodily function. It's also involved in inflammation. And COX-2 is not just about inflammation. It also has crossover to normal bodily function. So just saying you're going to suppress, as an example, for one specific non-steroidal COX-2, and you're going to be free of side effects is not, in theory, it sounds good, but in practicality, it's not how it works out. So there's mixed functionality between both cyclooxygenase isomers 1 and 2. In veterinary medicine, we do get side effects, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. And the same is also true in people. And there's been several different drugs on the market, non-steroidals, in people that were supposedly more COX-2 selective, but also caused lots of other problems. So side effects are due to how the drug is actually working inside the body, right? I said non-steroidal anti-inflammatories block or inhibit the functionality of cyclooxygenase or COX, C-O-X. And because of that, think back for a second physiologically to what I talked about. Prostaglandins function. They help make the mucus that lines the GI tract and allow proper blood flow to the kidneys. So as you would expect, clinical signs, right? This is the Clinical Science Podcast. We can see vomiting in animals, diarrhea, loss of appetite. We can also see some nausea, which would ultimately result in drooling, and lethargy. On top of that, we can get irritation to the GI tract, which leads to an ulcer, which leads to perforation. Perforation of the GI tract is very severe. That means that there's going to be peritonitis, and that can be fatal. GI irritation or ulcers can be healed, provided that drugs are stopped appropriately and appropriate treatment is given. These drugs can also cause liver and kidney damage, right? By, we said, reducing blood flow to the kidneys. If you're inhibiting prostaglandins, who a non-steroidal, you're going to decrease blood flow to the kidneys, and that can lead to kidney damage and kidney failure. And then the liver metabolizes non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and you can have cell damage, or you can even have liver failure with these drugs. And again, that can all lead to death. So unfortunately, the outcome of a side effect of a non-steroidal, it can be from very minor to very severe. Contraindications of these drugs: you never want to mix any non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and you don't want to give an animal a steroid with a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, because that can enhance the side effects of actually both drugs. So the side effects can be what's called dose-dependent, meaning that as long as the animal gets the proper dose, everything is okay. But if the animal gets too much medication at one time, or the animal is dosed too frequently, we can cause these problems that I just mentioned, or we can have dose independent, that any dose that any animal gets is going to cause a problem. Now, there had been some Labrador retrievers that had had problems with the drug called carprofen, which is Rimadyl, and it was basically limited to a set or subset of Labrador retrievers. But I know for myself, I've dosed plenty of Labrador retrievers with Rimadyl carprofen, and it's worked fine with no side effects. So I don't know why those particular Labrador retrievers were ever found. I don't know what the cause is, why they attributed it to that non-steroidal, but maybe I'll... Alrighty, I'm back from the interwebs, and there is nothing specific about those Labrador retrievers. So they could have been what's called idiosyncratic reactions, meaning that it's unknown why those dogs had problems. And, you know, at this point, it's many years. I mean, we're well over a decade now since all that happened. And again, I know that I have experienced, I've used it myself on my own dog. I've prescribed it to other dogs, other labs with no issues. Doesn't mean that it can't happen. But like most of what I read, you really have to key, if you're a veterinarian or a veterinary technician, you really have to key people into the possible side effects. And anytime I dispense those drugs, prescribe those drugs, I always told people about the vomiting, the diarrhea, they stop eating, they become lethargic, they need to stop the medication and call immediately. So this will be my disclaimer for this podcast is, number one, never give a pet your medication. Never give a pet any over-the-counter human non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Number two, follow all prescribed directions if your veterinarian does give your pet a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory or any drug for that matter. If you do run into any of these side effects, or if even you're not sure, you should not administer the medication and call your veterinarian or take your to a veterinary emergency hospital so that it can be seen. Most of the side effects can be counteracted, provided that it's caught early enough. If you get, if a pet gets to the stage of kidney failure, liver failure, or GI tract perforation, then the prognosis is going to be much worse versus the prognosis, the chance of a good outcome or good recovery is going to be much higher the earlier, number one, that the issue is caught, and then number two, that the drug is stopped. We talked about dose dependent and dose independent, and those Labrador retrievers were dose independent. Again, it can happen with any drug to any animal. Okay, even though the drug is prescribed properly, you administer the drug properly, if you're an owner, that reactions happen, and they can happen in human beings as well. So it's when you're administering a drug to hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of patients, whether it's humans or animals, you're going to have reactions because of all the different genetic issues going on, or different genetics, different physiology, more hormone here, different health status. So gender differences in human beings, sex differences in dogs, whether dogs are spayed or neutered or not, there's tremendous numbers of reasons why people and animals have reactions to drugs. And sometimes it is genetic and you just don't know it. Okay, we talked about renal damage caused by non-steroidals is due to a decrease in that prostaglandin, and that decreases blood flow and you get damage to the kidneys. So precautions, you do not want to administer non-steroidal anti-inflammatories to animals that are dehydrated for the reasons we talked about with kidney and liver function. Any GI tract, liver, or kidney disease that's pre-existing is going to potentially expose the animal to having a greater risk of a side effect. So veterinarians are going to probably recommend some blood work and a urinalysis. If it were me, I would recommend what's called a CBC, a complete blood count, which looks at the red blood cells and the white blood cells and platelets, a serum chemistry, which looks at internal organ function, and a urinalysis. And a urinalysis is a great tool because it tells you tremendous amount of information about the actual kidney function itself. You can get a little bit, you can get some decent information off of the serum chemistry now. We had talked about recently about tests were not replacing creatinine, but a little bit more sensitive. Okay, that SDMA test, though, that's available on chemistry tests, is at least 50% more sensitive than tests for creatinine. So it's going to pick up changes to kidney function much earlier than creatinine, which is great. And then depending if this is short-term or long-term use, it's going to depend if the veterinarian is going to recommend repeat blood work and urinalysis. So longer-term patients are going to need more frequent CBC chemistry and urinalysis testing. So that's pretty much NSAIDs in a nutshell. Let me talk about acetaminophen for a minute. Acetaminophen is not a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. Never give acetaminophen to cats. I don't even recommend it for dogs, actually, because I don't think it really is great. I think most of the pain that animals experience is due to some inflammation. So acetaminophen is toxic to cats. Cats are not little dogs. Dogs and cats are not little people. We can't dose them at the same frequency or with the same drugs. Cats have less of an ability. Their liver is different than a dog's or our liver, and it cannot metabolize acetaminophen. And what it does is it causes liver damage and causes damage to the red blood cells, where the red blood cells cannot carry enough oxygen. And that will kill a cat pretty darn quick. I did see a case of this when I was a student trying to get into vet school. I worked in an animal hospital, and there was a case of a cat that had been administered acetaminophen. And there was an antidote, but the cat was, I saw the cat. I still remember the cat to this day. Quite a bit of suffering going on. So never administer acetaminophen to a cat, nor any over-the-counter non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and certainly no human medications. You need to call your veterinarian first if you have any questions. Never use your, and I said this, never use your own NSAID on a pet without consulting a veterinarian first. There's multiple different brands of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. There's a couple that are approved for cats. There's many approved for dogs. Some are now generic, which will be slightly lower cost, but should basically have the same bioequivalence and ability to work on that the pharmaceutical branded product does. So generics should be fine. Cats, again, there's only a couple of them, and in cats, we try not to use these drugs for long-term purposes, again, because cats do not metabolize these drugs like dogs do. And the drugs have a much longer effect in a cat than in a dog. So obviously, any non-steroidal dispensed or scripted out for a cat needs to be very judiciously watched and administered. So I hope this was an interesting episode. I really enjoyed diving back into non-steroidals myself. I think the next episode we're going to talk about corticosteroids, which are sort of the little bit more potent than a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, have many similarities but some differences, which should be interesting for us to talk about. Anyway, overall, great to be back with you. This has been Non-Steroidal Anti-Inflammatories on the Clinical Science Podcast, and my name is Dr. Panarella. I'll see you again soon.